It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 396 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we have the return of Caleb Palmquist, who was the driving force behind a Small Favor anthology, and he's back with another anthology, this time called Modern Mythology. We talk about his role in the book. He's given me a chance to look over some of the stories in it, so we get to talk about that. We discuss who created the stories and what kinds of things we can expect from this book, which is on Kickstarter right now. So be sure to look up Modern Mythology. It's going to end in mid-September, but don't wait until then. Be sure to get out there and support it today so he doesn't have to sweat bullets like so many Kickstarter people do. We also talk a little bit about another Kickstarter that he had recently, and it's a really interesting little story, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Greetings, my noble titans. You have been selected by me, Kronos, the god of the gods, to give you a golden opportunity to bear witness to a collection of mythologies retold for the modern age. Behold, Modern Mythology, The Hero's Journey. Inside lays a series of short stories created by a multitude of extraordinary artists and writers, retelling tales of the great gods and heroes themselves. Considerably less great than me, obviously. Set in modern times, from Theseus to Hercules, Achilles to Enkidu, creatives from all over the world came together to bring forth this epic collection, one that I, Kronos, the best god that there is, approves of. There we go. It was missing a little something. Mwah. Modern Mythology. Complete your role as a god among men. Available on Kickstarter now.
It's always great to welcome to the podcast Caleb Palmquist, creator of A Small Favor, which was a great anthology, and some other irons in the fire right now. How's it going, Caleb?
It's going awesome. How are you, Wayne?
Good, good. Let's dive right in. You've got another anthology book, which you made available to me, at least a preliminary copy, and I got to read some of the stories in it. Why don't you describe what it is, because there's a Kickstarter going on right now for that.
Right. So this book is called Modern Mythology, The Hero's Journey. And so it's an anthology book that is basically about retelling stories from mythology in the modern day. Mm-hmm. So basically everyone who contributed chose a mythological hero from, they could pick from any culture in the world, and they chose a mythological hero and then they told a new version of that story.
Okay. And do you know how many pages you're going to have in this book?
So it's going to be about 150 pages.
Okay. Well, all said and done. Because the version you gave me only had 124, but there's a lot of pages that weren't quite there yet, so that's okay. But I got to read them. I enjoyed the stories a lot. They're, as usual, when you do something like this, it's quite an interesting journey to go on down these ways. And I was saying to you before we started to record about the fact that one of them didn't quite strike me as heroic. And we don't want to spoil that story very much, but it's we can say it's Vasilisa is the name of it, and it's written and illustrated by Alex Lewis. And it's a really good story, except that, well, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I don't think it ends all that heroically. Maybe this is just a chapter in her story.
So that's interesting, because the story of Vasilisa is basically based on the character that's more well-known, I guess, in popular culture is Baba Yaga, who is the villain of the story. Mm-hmm. And for anyone listening who has seen the movie John Wick, the third John Wick, mm-hmm. They talk about, they like compare John Wick to Baba Yaga, because mm-hmm. she's like this, Baba Yaga is like this vengeful kind of force. Mm-hmm. And I totally get what you're saying about Vasilisa not totally being a hero. Mm-hmm. And I guess the thing about that is that, well, part of, I think, what happens when you have a book where you're like, we're going to talk about a bunch of heroes, characters that, mm-hmm. that we consider to be heroes, that are classic stories, is that you kind of have to wrestle with the idea of what a hero is, what it means to be a hero. Because if you're going by a definition of like someone who's virtuous and does good things, then yeah, I think you might be right. Vasilisa might not be really a hero. Mm-hmm. But if you're going by, you know, depending on what definition you're going by, because like you're talking about like Joseph Campbell, mm-hmm. his, you know, Joseph Campbell, the hero with a thousand faces, like the proto myth, like the proto hero is, you know, someone who like starts in one world and goes on a journey and comes back changed. Mm-hmm. And I think under that, like sort of broader umbrella, every hero in our book fits that. Mm-hmm. But that's casting a pretty wide net.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that gets me is well, on one level, she's rid the world of certain problems, shall we say, mm-hmm. when we get to the end of it. And I was actually reminded more of the, what's her name in the Ugly Stepsisters story.
Oh,
what's the name of that?
Cinderella,
yeah. Yep. And that Ugly Stepsister. I was reminded of that, and I thought what was happening was he was going a different direction, shall mm-hmm. we say. And so in that way, I kind of liked it. And then, you know, the world's a better place for Vasilisa being around, I will say that. And so in that way, she's heroic. I mean, the world is clearly improved, shall we say, by the end of what she's up to. I thought the art was particularly good, and the story was interesting, too. I mean, the basic story is a girl who gets a doll,
uh-huh.
is the thing about that. And I was fascinated. I thought the drawing of the doll was particularly interesting, too. The whole thing, I thought the artwork was really well done, and I thought the fact that it had this interesting twist at the end got me, but I didn't see it was very heroic. But on the other hand, it's a really good story.
Oh well, I mean, I'm glad you think so. I'm really glad that you latched onto this particular story. It's also one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It was written and drawn by a woman named Alex Lewis, mm-hmm. Who is a relatively new comic book artist. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing that she did with this story is that she actually took classic Russian drawings and paintings and use them as the inspiration for a lot of the scenes. Hmm. So at some point it would be interesting to take those original drawings and the new and her drawings and sort of put them side by side to see sort of where that inspiration came from. But yeah, it's she spent a lot of time on that story. There's a lot of intricate details in there. So I'm really glad that you picked up on that and that you enjoyed that story.
That's pretty good. Now, what was your role in all of this? Because as far as I can see, you're not writing any of this. Are you the editor of this? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. Okay. So unlike my previous book, my previous book, A Small Favor, the science fiction book, is like completely written by me, mm-hmm. Along with my co-creator, John Grimes. But we write the whole thing and then we just hire artists. And this book is much more of sort of a collaborative piece. So I originally had tossed around ideas for a story that I might write in this book, but essentially like time and a few other factors got in the way. But the thing is, my role is that I created the book and I'm the editor. Mm-hmm. So basically I'm just managing the whole thing. And yeah,
well, good, because you know the truth of the matter is you don't necessarily have to write every story, so you can make sure it's a good story by editing it and doing stuff. Because what's gotten the role that I do on occasion, I get to something and I go look at it and I go, well, you know, that doesn't quite fit the bill what you're after there, and then I would ask, you know, somebody about that. But it's interesting that you're wearing a different hat this time.
Yeah, and it's actually really cool. I actually really like it. I think that if I do another anthology like this, and if it goes well, I totally plan to, because it's been a really great experience. But mm-hmm. if I do another one, I might end up writing a story in it. But really, the important part for me is bringing all these people together mm-hmm. with a sort of a common vision. Mm-hmm. And it's been phenomenal. Actually, like some people warned me that it would be really stressful to run a book like this. But I mean, there's been some stress, but to be honest, it's been an amazing experience. Like all the people who are contributing are like very excited about it mm-hmm. and they took it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And they really like, I mean, I just had this silly idea for a book. I was like, what if we retold myths in the modern day? And then a bunch of people got excited about it and made it real, which is an incredible feeling I can't begin to describe.
Mm, that's cool stuff. Now, let's talk about the cover right off the bat. Who did the cover?
So the cover is done by Angela Oddly, who is a really cool artist. She does a webcomic that she writes called Detached.
Now, if I'm understanding things correctly, some of the characters from the stuff inside are on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
I see the spider. There's a story with a spider involved. I see her on there, and I see some other people. They're not all people from stories, are there? There's some other characters that are not necessarily in the stories?
Yeah, not all the characters that are on that cover are in the book.
Okay.
So Water Jar Boy, you see him right there. He's in the book. Anansi is
the
spider. He's in there.
Is that he or she? The spider.
Anansi is a he.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Somewhere I got the impression. But you know what I keep thinking of? I keep thinking of Charlotte's Web.
Mm-hmm.
And I interpreted Charlotte's Web onto that, and kept thinking it was a female because of Charlotte.
I don't know if
you ever read that story, but
yeah, of course. Yeah,
that one there. Okay.
So, and then Hercules, I think that's Hercules there with the bat. And now there is a story with Hercules, not in the version that you read. Mm-hmm. That story got finished right after I sent you that preview copy.
Okay.
But there is a story with Hercules, but it's not this version of Hercules. And then, so it looks like there's a few characters that are in the book. And then I think that Angela was just trying to sort of give the feeling of sort of different cultures on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like how the different dragon heads are clearly from different mythologies.
Right, right. Very good. Yeah, I love the cover. I thought the cover. I like the purples are one of those colors that's really tough to get to work well. But I think this one does it super. I think it really does a nice job using the purples and the yellows and some of the reds. It's all a nice color scheme to that. So I think it works out really nicely.
Well, for sure, yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the stories. Talk about The Hunter and the Lion, which is the first one that I had available to me. I'm really, because this is the one with the spider in it.
Mm-hmm.
That I really liked. I never read a story like that before, so I liked it. I liked the fact that the spider was able to interact instead of just kind of stand around and say, well, you know, maybe this should happen, that should happen. This Anansi was able to do things, and I loved the fact that it was a big surprise when things appear to resolve.
And then it goes a different way.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that. I was stunned.
Oh, yeah.
So I love to be surprised. As you well know, I variety is my thing. And I also like it when I read a story that I haven't read before and it goes a different direction than I planned. And I really, that story at the very beginning sets the tone, I think, for the rest of the book in the sense that we're not going to be able to tell what's going to happen.
Absolutely. So this story is written by Greg Anderson, Ellie Say, and drawn by David Braham. So this story is actually a tie-in to Greg's Is None of the Werespiders series. Are you familiar with that at all?
No, I'm not.
So Greg writes this series of books, comic books, called Is None of the Werespider, and it's about this character he created, Is Nana, who is the son of Anansi, who is the actual African god of stories. Mm-hmm. And the series is fantastic. And the thing is that I've known Greg for a few years. We run in sort of the same circles in terms of comic book people. And when I came up with this idea for this anthology, I was like, your character fits this perfectly. And so I went to him and I asked him if he'd do a story for the book, and he agreed. And so the story, The Hunter and the Lion, is None of the Werespiders story, and it's only going to appear in this anthology, which is really cool because it's definitely, it's like canon. It's part of his larger universe, but it fits so perfectly into what we're doing in this book. And I totally agree. The storytelling in that is great. Greg is this genius writer, I think. I mean, I think, like, he's going to be one of the next big things in terms of comic book writers. And so I was really thrilled to have him on. And the story's great. And like you said, it's unpredictable. And I totally agree. Like, it sets the tone in terms of a lot of the people who wrote stories in this book, like, really went a different direction than you would have expected, which is awesome.
That's great. Okay. Because when I got done reading it, I was like, whoa. A lot of surprises along the way, which, you know, as somebody who's read comics as long as I have. I love that stuff. So I was really like, wow, that was a good way to start. Now, is that the first story that's going to be when the book comes out?
Yep, that is the first story in the book. Yep.
Good choice. So that, to me, when I read it, I said from there on out, I have to throw all my notions to the side. I have no idea what's going to happen. So I like that. And then the second one, of course, is Water Jar Boy, which who you said was on the cover. Talk a little bit about that story.
So Water Jar Boy is a Native American myth, and it's written by Philip Charles and drawn by Ryan Kroboff, two really cool guys. Mm-hmm. And the original myth is about a water jar, and of course in their version he becomes a water bottle, like a discarded water bottle, and there's a sort of a message there about taking care of the environment and whatnot. And it's a short story, but I think it's very neat. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. Again, I didn't know what was going to happen. It turned out really well. Now, of course, the one thing that stands out to me is, of course, I recognize the comic store in the background. Got a kick out of it. You list Gotham's Finest Comics in the back there.
Right.
If you're in Florida, I think you know where that place is. Uh-huh. So I got a kick out of that. The art style is very different from the other one. The other one's more realistic. This is more cartoony on some levels. So, mm-hmm. I mean, did you tell these people to vary the art styles? I mean, was it just happened this way, that the one style was a little more realistic and this one was a little more, I don't know, a Saturday morning kind of feel to it?
Right. So as far as the art styles go, I mean, I kind of, you know, let people fly their flag the way they wanted to. Like, mm-hmm. everyone came to me with story pitches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the, like, whether it was a writer, an artist, or just an artist who was also writing, they came to me. And some of them I reached out to, and some of them came to me. And you know, I wasn't going to dictate what kind of style they were going to do. Obviously, like, I had some input in terms of, you know, what fits in this book and what doesn't tonally, thematically. But yeah, as far as art style, I mean, it was everyone who came to me, if I liked what they were selling, you know, we were off to the races.
Good. Good. Well, now, the next one is called, I hope I pronounce it right, Theseus.
Theseus. Yep.
Yeah. Written by Russell Nolte, who I've interviewed on this podcast a while back. And it's a different kind of a story there, too. Talk about this one. I mean, I don't want you to, of course, give away secrets and stuff like that. They'll make the story work. But I got an interesting Theseus is somebody who apparently carries his cell phone with him wherever he goes.
So, yeah, in this story, Theseus is sort of like a hipster, and instead of, you know, trying to navigate the maze with a string or anything like that, sort of like in the original myth, he uses an app called Maze, which is sort of a parody of Waze, to navigate the map, which is a cute idea. This story is drawn by Nicholas Torres, who has actually worked with me extensively in the past. Nick has done a ton of work for a lot of people. He's very prolific. He drew a big portion of my first A Small Favor book. Mm-hmm. And so these guys have worked together before. So this story is definitely one of the sillier ones in the book. Mm-hmm. And I actually really like that because I feel like there's a huge range of like tones in this book. So we've got stories that are really sort of sad and introspective and somber. Mm-hmm. And then we've got all the way on the other end, we've got this like really wacky, silly cartoon story about Theseus using a phone app to get to the center of the maze.
Mm-hmm. But there's a big surprise.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Again, you get a huge surprise, which I'm reading this thing going along. All of a sudden there's a big surprise. And I went, whoa, okay, I didn't see that coming. So, you know, surprises seem to be part of the heroic journey.
Yeah, I think that there was definitely a big inclination for a lot of the writers in this book to throw a twist onto the story. So a lot of these stories, like, we know, I think a lot of readers on some level will be familiar with, like, the story of Theseus and the Minotaur is a story at some point that everyone's heard. Mm-hmm. And so I think that because these stories are so familiar, a lot of the writers wanted to give it a twist, wanted to change something up so that it felt fresh and new. And I think for the most part, they really succeeded.
Well, the first two panels I have to read because they made me laugh. This king obviously sitting in a throne, and he says, "You, Theseus, wish to travel into the labyrinth alone and fight the Minotaur yourself?" And he responds, it'll get me out of this dumb conversation, then I'll do whatever. Which made me laugh right out loud because, you know, so many people get on your cell phone and you're suddenly stuck in this conversation you can't get out of. And right. That's what he does there. Now, again, the surprise at the end is so worth it. Very, very big surprise, which I liked. So, you're setting up a pattern here of, again, I knew I wasn't going to know what was happening, and boy, am I surprised. So it's good stuff. Now, the next one is a very different one. You know, all the other ones are full color, and this one, we get to this one called Tristan, and it's, let's see if I can get the name of that. It's Noah Meese, I think is the name of the person.
Noah Meese. So, Noah Meese is one of my favorite people on this planet. He is the main artist on A Small Favor, and he is the first artist who ever took a chance on me as a writer. And so I always try to rope him into everything that I do. Now, the thing about this story, the version that you read did not have an explanation. So every story in the final published version, the writer is going to write a little explanation of the original myth and their interpretation of it.
Okay.
And in this, I totally understand why you might have been confused, because he chose to interpret the story of Tristan and Isolde, which is a story that maybe not everyone has read, but it's sort of... it's like a Romeo and Juliet kind of story. And in Noah's version, Tristan is a sad, heartbroken boy staring at his phone, hoping that a girl will text him. And I think that the art is beautiful. I think this is the best work Noah has ever done in a comic book. And I'm just blown away by it. I will say, there is almost no lettering or narration in the book, in the comic. And so if you're not familiar with the story of Tristan Isolde, you might be a little in the weeds. But in the final version, there's going to be a little summary of the original story. So that should help.
I get a huge kick that there's another cell phone involved.
Oh, absolutely.
I got a kick out of that because, you know, you get the sense that he's heartbroken. And at the end, you know, it's like he falls asleep. Or something, or gets heartbroken and he just doesn't want to look at the phone anymore, or something like that. So I got that. So it's really good. And then, of course, we talked about Vasilisa already, which I really liked. So the next one after that is called Setna and the Book of Thoth. I never get these TH sounds right. Is it Thoth? Thoth or Thoth? Okay, I never know. And this one is, again, your art style is very different. She's moving on to it. It's talking about somebody who's the son of an affluent minister and has lived a sheltered life. And then we begin to see that he's a reader by nature, and that takes him into some supernatural doings, which is good. I like the use of color in this particularly. They're more subdued. There's a picture of an image, let's just say. It's green. There's a light green in the background kind of going on. It really is interesting. I think this has to do with Egyptian mythology.
Absolutely. Yep, this is an Egyptian story. And it was written by a guy named Sheldon Fisher, who this is his first comic book script. Yeah, so that was very exciting. And I think he did a really good job. And he teamed up with a guy named Locke Noyan, I think is how you say his name, but I'm not totally sure. Sorry, Locke. But it was... What they did with this story is that Sheldon actually drew the roughs, like the thumbnails of the story, and then Locke came in and did the pencils and the inks. And so I'm not really sure how that necessarily impacted the art, but I think it turned out pretty cool. And I like that we had an Egyptian story, which was really cool. And I also, personally, I'm a huge fan of the whole concept of, like, seeking knowledge and like, is that always
the right thing?
The right thing. So one of my favorite plays ever is Dr. Faustus by Christopher Marlowe. Are you familiar? Okay. So I love that play, and like, that's totally an allegory of, you know, like reaching too far. And that story's been told, you know, a million times. Like, this is a classic parable. And so I really liked this version of it. I think the art was great, and I love that Sheldon came out the gates with like a really strong story.
Of course, I have to, at the very, the one part of the end I will spoil, it says end, but before that it says, this isn't my end. which I loved. I thought that was a great way to, you know, it says the end, but this isn't the end. That's how he describes it. So I like that. Thing about it. Okay, the next one is written and illustrated by Daniel Hill. Benkei. Okay, talk about that one, because this is a little more Oriental in feel, or Asian, I guess I should say these days, Asian in feel.
So Benkei is actually sort of falls under the umbrella of folklore, because Benkei was a real person who was a warrior monk in Japan, and Daniel sort of tells a story of, the way the story goes is that Benkei is sort of sitting on a bench telling children about his life. Mm-hmm. And it's basically sort of, you know, he goes to war and all this other stuff that's going on. And there's some sort of like commentary on war and protests and friendship, which I really liked. And I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but Daniel, the cool thing about Daniel is that this was his first comic book, but he's been an artist for a while. Mm-hmm. He draws for a living. He draws album covers. And so he was interested in this project and he came on, and I think he did a really stellar job.
That's great. But the end, of course, surprised me. I mean,
of course,
where things go along the way, and the very last scene, it's very touching to me, even though it's got some stuff going on in it. I'm very surprised by it. So, you know, I love that about all this. It's just an amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely think this story is very heartfelt, and I love the way it turns out. And it's definitely and this is a story. So when I started this anthology, I thought that a lot of people were going to come to me with, you know, primarily like Greek myths, like your standard stuff, and a lot of people did, but we ended up getting a lot of stories outside of that from all sorts of different cultures. And Benkei is someone that I didn't know anything about before I started this project. So it was really cool to learn about him. I ended up doing some research about the actual historical character and the folklore behind him. And so that was just, it was really cool to see. And I'm glad we're getting that sort of culture and that story represented.
See, I'm always reminded when we talk about this kind of stuff, I'm always remembering back to some of the earliest comics I ever read, which is back in like the early 1960s. It was Gardner Fox was writing these Justice League stories. And he often taught things when he was going along. They would go into like Journey into the Micro World or something like that, and he would teach science. You know, they'd have fire and water, and all these different elements were there, and then they have other kinds of situations where they would learn other things. And I always came away going, gosh, I didn't know that before. And this is the kind of thing with that story. I didn't know anything about that character until, but now I want to learn more, which is good stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the next one, I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce it. Kuchelain, is that how you pronounce it?
Kuchelain.
See, I knew I'd mess it up. And it's a different story. It's written by Fallon Walker, it says, with illustrations by Kirk McLaughlin and letters by Steve Wilt. Now, this is a dark one.
Oh, yeah.
Art-wise and story-wise, I think. It's based in Ireland. Talk about this story and you know, what it means to have the story in there.
So this is definitely one of the darker stories in the book. And I think that not only is sort of the original story pretty dark, but also the way that Fallon chose to set it is like against the backdrop of the IRA, which is, of course, I mean, you know, that's heavy stuff. And this is a tragedy. So we're definitely like on the opposite. If the Theseus story is on one end, we're over here on the extreme polar opposite end in terms of tonality and storytelling. And I like that. I think we're offering a lot of different things in this book, and I think that this story is it's dark, it's poetic, which I really like. And it's an Irish story, which again is another culture that we're touching on, which I really liked. And again, I don't want to give away, you know, too much of the plot in terms of what happens. But this was another person, another hero character that I didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
I heard for the first time when Fallon came to me and told me she wanted to do this story. Mm-hmm. And so I was really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And Fallon is actually someone that I've known for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Since before my comic book writing days.
Mm-hmm.
She and I went to film school together.
Mm-hmm.
Way back. You know, we're talking 2010. But then I found out later on that she started to write comics. And mm-hmm. so we kind of like reconnected mm-hmm. over that. So it was really cool to get to work with her. And I think that I like this story because, like I said, it sets a one end of the spectrum in terms yep. of tone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. I liked it quite a lot for that. So, okay, then the next one is called Beowulf.
Mm-hmm.
Phoebe Xavier, looks like, with illustrations by Federico. I just managed to go
Federica DiTizio.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this is interesting because this is, again, we're changing styles almost completely. This has a little more of a, again, it's a little more back to the cartoony, but it's still got a semi-serious feel to it. And, of course, the subject matter is pretty serious, too. Now, Beowulf, of course, isn't that a, as I remember Beowulf, this is in like a not European, but British, Scottish sort of a setup. Is mm-hmm. is this taking the story and putting it in a different setting? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like an old English epic poem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Beowulf, obviously famous, like, what sort of, I don't know if it's the original epic poem,
mm-hmm.
but it's up there. And in the original story, you know, Beowulf fights a monster named Grendel.
Mm-hmm.
And in this story, Beowulf is like, a sort of like cyber security special ops kind of guy who mm-hmm. fights a computer virus named mm-hmm. Grendel,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a really fun twist. This is definitely, this story kind of verges a little bit into the sci-fi genre,
mm-hmm.
but, and there's actually a time jump in the story, just like in the original story of Beowulf. So mm-hmm. it sort of starts out in a near future and then jumps forward to the future. And Beowulf is living in a space station orbiting the Earth, and it more or less follows the plot of the original story of Beowulf,
mm-hmm.
But it's sort of set against this sort of sci-fi, almost horror story.
Mm-hmm. The use of colors and stuff, that has more of a painted feel.
Oh, yeah.
This one does to the others. And I like it when it goes a different direction than I've been, and that's what this one is doing. As soon as I saw Beowulf, I thought, oh, this is going to be another Scottish story, but it isn't really. It takes the premise of the legend and puts it into a different setting. So I like
Absolutely.
That. I like that kind of stuff. I like it when I get exposed to things that are somewhat different.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And next comes Achilles, written and illustrated by Trey MacDonald.
Yep.
And this one is a lot more anime feel, look like it.
Oh, yeah. So Trey MacDonald is actually an animator by trade.
Mm-hmm.
He has a pretty popular YouTube channel where he does animated shorts, and he has some animated series. And he's like a – his work is like his personality. He's like very fun mm-hmm. and sort of bubbly. And that I think that comes through in this story. And this is a very short and simple story, but we're, you know, Achilles. It's the story of Achilles. But for how sort of serious and dramatic the original myth of Achilles is, I feel like his story is a much more lighthearted and, like, heartwarming take on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it talks about winning. I mean, mm-hmm. What does it mean to win? Which I really liked. When I got to the end of it and I was reading some of the points that were being made at the end, I really liked it because I think sometimes we think winning is everything and there's a certain way you always must win. And this story basically says, well, not necessarily. So yeah. I liked that. That was a really good story with that. All these are really great little stories. And some of them, the length varies a lot too, which is something. It's not always the same length. So you right. never know when you're coming to the actual end of a story. You know, if you get a certain number of pages, you think, oh, well, I'm going to be done here in a minute. But no, sometimes it goes longer and sometimes it's shorter. But that's good because it keeps the reader off balance, which I like. And then, of course, we get to Samson. That's a legend I know a lot more about because it's biblical.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff and it takes Samson in a very different direction, which I was really surprised by. And it takes elements of Samson's story and moves him in a different direction, which I liked. I talk about this one.
Okay, so Samson is written by Darby Shelton and Dee Parsons. Now, Dee Parsons is a cartoonist, mm-hmm. Who is sort of making waves in cartoons, like cartoon strips, like newspaper strips, kind of. And so that you can really feel that in the art style. But the I really like this story because, again, sort of like the Achilles story, it takes a story that we all know pretty well, and it gives it this like really heartwarming twist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like you've finished the story and you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like that a lot. It's like, you know, it's just, it's, it, like you said, like a lot of these stories, it takes a twist that you're not necessarily expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But in this story, it's really a very nice ending.
Well, it talks about what is strength, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it physical strength? Are there other kinds of strength? And when I got to the very end of the story, I kind of felt, well, you know, Samson was still strong, even though some things had changed. He was still a strong person, and that you come away with that in the sense that you don't necessarily have to be able to lift weights in order to be a strong person.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think this is a story that that's very inspiring, and you know, kind of like you said, the idea that even if you go through something that changes who you think you are, mm-hmm. or your vision of yourself, you can still be a strong person. You can still be valuable,
mm-hmm. and important to people. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. About that. All right, next one is called Dynasty, and it's based on a myth I'm not familiar with called Aeneas.
Aeneas, yeah. So Aeneas is like the follow-up to the story of Troy, right? So so you've got the Iliad, and then there was a Roman story called Aeneas,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, about more or less, I mean, I don't want to get super into that whole story, but it's essentially about like the founding of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And so Clay Adams, the writer, decided mm-hmm. to tell that story, but set against sort of like a mob background,
mm-hmm.
and it's a family drama,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like that's just like a very fun twist, mm-hmm. on the story. And of course, like at the end of the story, you know, it's another one of those stories where like this is really a beginning,
mm-hmm.
and yeah.
Well, at the beginning, what happens is somebody makes predictions about how these three guys are going to turn out.
Yep.
And it's interesting how each person gets a different direction in their life. And when we get to the end, we finally see one of them come true,
mm-hmm.
which I liked. I liked that real well. So there's a dog involved with it, too, that I kind of get a cute, you know, huge kick. He's going into Las Vegas, which, of course, he's going to probably develop Las Vegas as it comes later
right.
on. So really nice story. And Pwyll, P-W-Y-L-L, is that how it's pronounced?
Pwyll, I think Pwyll, it's pronounced Pwyll, and that's a Welsh myth.
Okay.
And I really like this story.
Mm-hmm.
It's written and drawn by Katrina Kunstmann,
mm-hmm.
who has done a lot of really cool comics. She has a series called Warhead,
mm-hmm.
that she draws, and then she did a book with Caleb Toussaint called Afterlife, or mm-hmm. Alterlife,
that's right.
Yeah, which was really cool. And in this story, the character of Rhiannon becomes a surfer girl,
mm-hmm.
who Pwyll is like is sort of trying to get the attention of, and failing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is a pretty simple story, but I think it's mm-hmm. very cute, and I really like the direction that she went with
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the male female dynamic is really always going to be a mystery. You know, we are constantly trying. I mean, you know, guys are always saying, I wish I could figure women out. And, you know, in this story, you're right in the sense that it's, you could call it simple, but it's direct.
Oh, yeah.
If sometimes you need to be more direct instead of trying mm-hmm. different, you know, different means to get someone's attention. And I really liked it in the sense that he goes through a whole lot of things until finally, out of desperation, he does something that he probably should have done at the very beginning. And
yep.
things go along. It was really, you know, because, like I said, all my friends are going, I don't understand. How do I get, you know, I can't understand my female friends. Why won't they do this and the other? And because he finally just wises up, I have to say, and takes the more direct route, things change.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's very heartwarming in that sense. You know, when you get to the very last panel, it's really kind of cute the way that it goes. So it's a really well-told story. I really like it. I don't know how many friends I've had in my life who are, you know, and I'm not known for my relationships with the opposite sex or even with the same sex. And I've got so many friends that have always come to me and said, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? I, as an outsider, I can look at it and say, well, I had a guy that was trying to date an already married woman. And he was going, what should I do? What should I do? And I said, well, you know, all I can tell you is go to her and tell her what you want. And if that's, and then whichever she decides, you're going to have to go with it. Never did that, of course, but that was the thing you should have done. And I always get a kick because as an outsider on, especially on all these others' relationships, I can sort of look at that. And I got that same sense when I was reading the story, in the sense that, you know, we don't understand, you know, what somebody else is thinking, and therefore we make assumptions.
Right.
And that's what this story was talking about. You don't necessarily need to make assumptions, you just need to interact.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Then we get to that. Now, of course, that's the last story that I've seen. Now, you said there's a Hercules story.
So there are three stories that you haven't seen. So there's a Hercules story, which was finished for right after I sent you the press copy. It's by Jonathan Fisher, and it's a really cool story. It's actually one of my favorites, and I will I'll send you another version that has it. But it casts Hercules as a protector. So in the original myth of Hercules, he has to do these labors, you know, to sort of prove himself. And one of them is to hunt a lion. Well, in this version of the story, instead, as atonement, he's protecting lions. So he is actually up against poachers. And it's a, like, this story is phenomenal. I can't wait for you to read it because it's it's a dark horse. Jonathan Fisher came to me. I didn't really know anything about him. He had this pitch. I liked it, and he turned in the story, and it's amazing. It's it's fantastic. In fact, I have already started talking to Jonathan about working with him in the future on one of my own personal books. Cool. because I liked his work so much.
Oh, wow.
But, and then we've got a story called Jason by Angela Odling, who is the artist of the cover. And that was also one that was just finishing up as I sent you the press copy. And this is a very cute story. All of her work is very cute. It's got this very sort of like cartoon style, but it's like, it's very sort of like an intimate cartoon style. But she did the story about Jason and the Golden Fleece, except instead of going to steal an actual Golden Fleece, Jason is a frat guy who has been tasked with stealing a Golden Fleece jacket from the leader of an opposing frat. And it's a very fun, it's a very cute story. And that is actually going to be the final story in the book, sort of like an end cap. And then there's one more story, which is called Brothers of War by Aaron Pohara, which is a, I want to say it's an Indian myth about two brothers. And I don't know a whole lot about it. And that that story, there was an issue with some of the art, and so we're not really, that story may or may not be in the final book. I really hope it is, because the script I really liked, but yeah, we're not sure.
Okay. Now, I also noticed you had some pinups at the end, and these are some characters that don't appear in the other stories. There's one called Sun Wukong by Daryl Toy. It looks like it's a lion, or no, monkey type of guy. There, it looks like it's Buddhist because he's got a Buddha behind him. And then you have I always mispronounce his name. Persephone, and Hades.
Yeah, Persephone and Hades. So Sun Wukong, that was a pinup that was drawn by Daryl Toe. He's an Australian artist. He's really cool. And Sun Wukong is also known as the Monkey King.
Okay.
And he is a Chinese character. And I just love that piece of art. Persephone and Hades was drawn by a woman named Camry Lapka, who is who offered to do a pinup. That's really cool. And then what's the other one?
Is Medusa. Yeah. That one, that's a more modern take on Medusa.
Absolutely. So
I really liked.
Medusa, that one was drawn by an artist named Daniel Hooker, who is someone I met at HeroesCon this year.
Okay.
And Daniel is a phenomenal artist, and I really liked his take on Medusa. Essentially, he sort of, when he sent me the art, he told me that he was inspired. If he had time, he wanted to someday draw a story about this Medusa character, because in his mind, this version of Medusa was traveling around the world, sort of like getting revenge on the men who wronged her.
Because there's like an airplane or a helicopter or something in the background.
Uh-huh.
I see. And of course, the what I really like is that the hair is really long and the snake heads are down the bottom. Most of them are down near her waist and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different feeling. Of course, she's got sunglasses and all kinds of stuff. So you have to wonder. And of course, then you see to the right, looks like a horse head or something with a hand on it with a trident. Mm-hmm. We'll go into more of that. There's obviously a story there. So I really liked it. I that was the three pinups that I saw. That one's one I liked the most.
Oh yeah, it's phenomenal. So there are three pinups in the version that I sent you, and there are going to be a number of other pinups that we're going to be revealing throughout the course of the campaign here, mm-hmm. as we go. And so I don't want to necessarily spoil it or say, because some of them are really fun, but there's a bunch of artists who offered to do pinups. Of course, some of the artists who, you know, I went to a lot of my favorite artists and asked them to participate in this book, and mm-hmm. some of them didn't have time to do stories, but I was able to trick them into, you know, giving me one pinup.
Well, the great stuff. It's a great book. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see the other parts that I haven't seen. I highly recommend. Now, of course, this Kickstarter is going on. When does this Kickstarter end?
Okay, so the Kickstarter is going to end. It's going to end on the 19th of September, I believe.
Okay, so let's see. That is let me get a quick glance.
A Thursday.
It's a Thursday. Do you know about what time?
Well, I'm going to be I did launch the Kickstarter at midnight on the 20th of this month, mm-hmm. and so it should end around midnight. So I'm pretty sure, okay. unless I got my math wrong, it should end on midnight the 19th of September.
That's good. Now, you're talking about midnight the evening of the 19th, not the morning of the 19th.
Yeah, the evening, yeah. Yeah, when okay. I say midnight, what I mean is actually Pacific time.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Because my company is based out of Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, you relocated.
So, yeah, I did relocate. I'm up in Washington now, so yeah.
You're lucky, dog. You're going to get to go to the Seattle conventions, which are really
yes, close. Absolutely. Emerald City Comic Con. I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, gosh. That's a great one. We were there last year. We didn't go this year. But it was just six levels of floors.
Oh, yeah.
Man, you know, one floor is nothing but gaming. One floor is nothing but Artist Alley. It's mm-hmm. just an amazing convention. It's just one of those. It's one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Just a great one up there. Now, this book, like I was saying, I love to learn things. So not only is the art great, but the storytelling is really good. And I'm just, you know, it's such a great thing for me to learn things about it. So it's just one of those books that I highly recommend, because, you know, I want to be aware of other cultures. I interviewed some folks who made comics in Canada, and I learned so much about that nation that I didn't know before. You know, and so for me, with this setup here, I'm learning a lot of stuff, and it prompts me to want to go out and do more research on it, because they're really interesting stories and really well told, and I'm just dying to know what the original tales are that are based. These are based on.
So in the final version of the book, what you're gonna see before every single story is a little background mm-hmm. on the original myth, mm-hmm. And what choices the writer made. But what that's going to include is some clues to where you can go to learn more about those myths.
Oh, that's good. That's
so
great.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I love learning new things, and mythology is one of my favorite things. Growing up, I loved Greek mythology, but mm-hmm. as I got older, I started learning about other cultures' mythologies, and mm-hmm. the whole concept of mythology just fascinates me. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely, I'm glad that you enjoyed learning more about those different cultures. And this book will definitely be like a starting place in terms of, if you read through this book and there's one story that you really like, you're going to be able to use this book as a resource, as a launching point for learning more about that culture and that mythology.
Very cool. See, that's kind of stuff I love. I love to learn stuff. I bought a book called, a long time ago, called Vietnamerica. It was about a Vietnamese person in America. And I learned so much about that culture, especially in this country. It was something I knew nothing about. And I was to San Diego one time, and I was walking through the floor, and there I saw the big sign for Vietnamerica. And I said, I loved your book. I said, I had no idea all this stuff was going on until I read the book, but I really loved it. And he, you know, the guy was like, wow, okay, thanks. That's great. So it's that way with this stuff. There are legends, you know, I kind of pride myself on knowing some of these legends, but I didn't know half of them. And so I was real, I'm dying to know more about them. I'm just anxious to get to see the book. Now, do you know when the book's actually going to be finished? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so we are finished with the book now, or it's 99% finished.
Cool.
And so as soon as when the Kickstarter ends, there's about a 3-week period, you know, where, before the money comes in from the Kickstarter. Right.
Of course.
And then as soon as we get that money after the Kickstarter, we're ordering the printed copies and we're using a domestic printer. So I will have the copies in hand by November.
Mm.
So if everything goes according to plan, mm-hmm. provided that there's no hiccups with the money coming in or the printing process, we will have the book out to the backers before the end of the calendar year.
Well, cool. Now, of course, we talked about conventions and stuff. Are you going to be doing any other conventions the rest of the year that you might have the book with you?
Unfortunately, not where I'll have the book, because I won't be getting the book until November. I am doing Rose City Comic Con in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And that is sort of like the sister convention to Emerald City Comic Con. And that's September. It's about halfway through September. And I'll be there, and the Kickstarter will actually still be going at that point. So I'll kind of be promoting this book, but I won't actually have it at any conventions until next year.
Okay. Well, all the more reason to support the Kickstarter and to get to be ready when you're sending them out. That'll be good stuff with that. Now, I've got one. Well, I always got to ask about social media. How do we follow up your projects on social media?
Okay, so this project in particular, you can find us on Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Modern Mythology. Mm-hmm. And then as far as my projects go, you on Instagram and Facebook, on A Small Favor or A Small Favor Comic, which is sort of my main comic book series. And then we also have a website, a sort of new website since the last time you and I talked, called enkidustudio.com, because the sort of the LLC that I operate under is called Enkidu Studio, and Enkidu is a character actually from a Sumerian myth.
Okay, how do you spell that, just so we know?
Enkidu.
Okay, because I would never have found it. So I'm glad that you can give us that information,
And I'll send you the addresses for those things.
Okay.
So you can list them. But yeah, so on Facebook, we do have a Modern Mythology account. I haven't really set up anything else like Instagram or anything for Modern Mythology, but Enkidu Studio and Small Favor is where you can follow my stuff.
Okay. Now I got one more subject I want to talk with you real briefly about. When I was looking in Kickstarter, I came across a fact that you had recently completed another Kickstarter. And I had never heard of it before, so I had to ask you about it. It's called Help Me Design This Giraffe.
Yeah, okay. All right, let me tell you about this. So basically, a few months ago, Kickstarter sent out an email. They said, we're doing a new initiative. You know, every once in a while, Kickstarter does an initiative. Like a while back, they did Kickstarter Gold, they did Make 100, things like that, where it's like, they invite creators to make a new Kickstarter, but with like some kind of a twist. Mm-hmm. And this one was called Break Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And basically the concept was, we want you to do a Kickstarter, but do something like wacky with the format. Mm-hmm. And like, they're big suggestion was basically like get the backers involved in a bigger way in your project. And so I sort of thought, what's something like really fun and simple and easy that I could do that would kind of follow up on that? And so basically I drew this giraffe and I put him on a postcard and I said, okay, anybody who gives me, like I made a bunch of unique reward tiers. And I was like, anybody who backs this project is like $1 or like $3 or like very small amounts of money. You get to pick one thing that goes on the giraffe. So there was like a level for, you get to pick what kind of hat the giraffe is wearing. Or you get to pick what kind of shoes the giraffe is wearing, or like what's the giraffe's favorite ice cream, or what's his zodiac sign, and like really silly stuff. And I thought I made it because I looked up how much it would cost to order postcards, and it was like, you know, I set a $25 goal. I was like, that's what I need. I'm gonna end up ordering like 10 postcards and like sending them out. Well, that's what I thought. And then like 65 people paid me to add stuff to this giraffe, and the final giraffe is ridiculous. It's got like 12 scarves on its long neck. It's got like rainbow wings. It has a cybernetic eye. It turns out it, like, this giraffe was an ex-KGB agent who likes to drink apple teenies, and all sorts of ridiculous other things that got added to this to this card. And I honestly, like, I was like a whim, and it really kind of took off in a really silly way. So I had a lot of fun with it, and I'm actually I just ordered the as we're speaking, I just ordered those postcards, and so I'm gonna be sending those out to the people, and I'm gonna, like, on the website that I ordered the postcards on, I had to order them in like multiples of 50 or something like that, so. So I'm going to end up having like 40 or 35 extra that I'm going to bring with me to the next time I go to a convention and just like give them out to people if they want them. But it was just like a really fun, silly thing. It was kind of a whim, but it turned out to be a lot of fun. And it became a community thing because obviously like the whole thing was that everyone was helping me design this giraffe together.
Well, you were looking for $25 was the goal, and you ended up with, according to this, $223.
Yep.
Which is quite a nice, you know, quite a change from the $25. So that's good, you know. And obviously people had a lot of fun with it, which is great. Because when I came across, I looked and I said, I have never heard of this. When was this? I never saw it. So I thought I'd ask you about it because I thought it was kind of a cute project, something kind of fun to do. So I'm glad it was so successful for you.
Yeah, it was fun. And I think people have already asked me if I'm going to do another thing that's similar. And I said, my answer to that is kind of like, It was a whim, and it's not something that I'm like trying to monetize or anything. Like that was never the intention. But maybe if Kickstarter, like next year, if they do another like initiative, and I can find a way to fit something silly into that again, maybe I'll do another one. But I mean, you know, I had fun with it, and yeah.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad you got to do it because when I started to look at it, I was going, you know, I was just baffled because I had not heard of it. And I tried to keep up with these things, and I looked at it, and I said, this is something different. I said, so I got a kick. I read where you said that Kickstarter approached you about doing some of this kind of stuff. It's nice that you're in a place where, you know, they can ask you to have fun with it. And obviously it was a huge success. So that's a great thing.
Yeah. It was fun. It was definitely fun. I didn't reach out to you about it because I didn't. It felt so silly and like that I didn't want to like make a big to-do and do a lot of press or anything like that.
Well, it turned out great for it. You know, I'm always glad when something – because Harry Potter, I always love to point this out. Harry Potter was written by a woman who was on welfare. She had a baby to raise. She would go to a restaurant and she would bring a typewriter or a computer or something and she would write her scripts while she was in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And everybody turned it down until she got to Scholastic, and then they bought the script, and she now is the richest woman in the world.
Right.
I love when something like that happens. I love when we don't expect something to take off and it does. I'm always enthralled by that, and I'm glad to see that this was one of those kinds of projects. So that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
So Caleb, you're doing great stuff, giraffes included. And hope we get to do some more for you. I'm sure this is going to be a big success, this Kickstarter. So we'll look forward to getting that. And we'll talk with you again sometime in the near future, I'm sure, because a lot of good things going on.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff. I'll be hitting you up soon.
Oh, great. We'll look forward to that.
All right. Thanks so much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.